Welcome to ITB's Travel Hero podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Lamp-Davies, with management consultancy A Bright Approach. Today, our travel hero is Jeremy Sampson, CEO of the Travel Foundation. The topic of today's podcast is sustainability. So buckle up, as Jeremy's insight and know-how in this area is second to none. Welcome, Jeremy. We're delighted to have you with us today.
Well, it's great to be here, Charlotte. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share some perspectives with the with your audience.
It's wonderful. Before we dive in, I'd really like you to tell us just a little bit about the Travel Foundation and the mission behind it, I guess.
Sure. The Travel Foundation has been around now for 21 years. We are a nonprofit organization registered in the UK. Actually, we started out with quite a remit focused on the UK and its holidaymakers traveling to destinations and the impact that that was already having on places. And from the very beginning, the main aspect of our DNA that has maintained throughout the history has been this idea of collective action. So pooling resources, pooling mindshare, pooling impact and influence to try to create something that's more than the sum of its parts. Today, we are consider ourselves a global organization, so not just a UK focus. We retain the idea of collective action, and the idea is to advocate for the industry's impact on destinations to be a net positive. We think that in the wide conversation about travel and tourism's impact and role in the world and the ever-emerging and increasing attention to issues around sustainability, climate action, you know, economic equity, that these issues are serious ones and require a voice on behalf of communities and the environment, which we all depend on for our livelihoods and for communities to thrive. And so that is our, that is our overall approach, is to be that voice for communities, to center communities in the environment in this discussion. And something that's occurred to us recently has been the need for independent leadership within our industry, where, you know, so many organizations are member-based or encumbered by politics. And we have really leaned in recent years to our status as an independent organization who understands the industry, but can also bring important topics to the table without concern for, whether or not it's going to impact our funding or, whether or not people will continue to support us. And we think that independent thought leadership and advocacy really makes a difference in the long run for addressing these issues that that the industry is grappling with.
Well, wonderful introduction there to the Travel Foundation. I've been lucky enough to hear both from you and some of your colleagues over the last few years, and really you are certainly at the forefront of really driving the conversation in this area. So thus you are our travel hero today. And I think that this really sets the scene very beautifully. My first question really is, you know, what will it actually take for the global travel industry to be fully decarbonized by 2050? There you go for a starter.
Well, it's one of my favorite questions, because it's something that we, you know, need to address in a meaningful fashion here. The time is ticking, and the climate emergency is getting more serious. 2050 is a hard timeline for some people to wrap their heads around. You know, when we launched the Glasgow Declaration on Climate Action and Tourism, we aligned the travel and tourism sector for the very first time with the Paris Agreement and with what science has been telling us for a while now, which is that we need to decarbonize by at least half our global economy by 2030. 2030 is just around the corner. And by 2050, to reach net zero at the very latest. As a global economy. And so the Glasgow Declaration is a joined up effort of the industry to work together to achieve those targets and to demonstrate that travel and tourism is taking seriously its role, both in addressing the impact that it has in producing emissions and also its role in providing a mechanism for solutions to the climate crisis. But to get to your question, what will it take to fully achieve these targets? There are three points that I think we need to really focus in on. First and foremost, we know that there is a huge investment still needed in transitioning our sector away from unnecessary carbon emissions. So that means in sectors like accommodation, in the tour operator space, in much of transport, that we need to ramp up the investment and transition in electrification and continue to invest in things like sustainable aviation fuel or alternative fuels in general to the, you know, to the current polluting fuel that drives, you know, is the engine behind most of our air travel. Now, we also know that some of the sectors that are critical to the global travel and tourism industry, namely air travel and namely long haul travel, are what we call hard to abate. So hard to abate means it's not going to happen quickly. And we do not currently have the technology or the solution to be able to just simply electrify all the planes and replace the fleet and off we go. Currently, we are only able to fuel the airlines that are flying around, you know, globally for less than one day with sustainable aviation fuels. And we need to get obviously to 365 days of the year. So what does this mean? We believe that we will have to, during this period of time where aviation needs to buy some time to catch up, to scale up its efforts to decarbonize, that we may have to look at restricting growth in some of these hard to abate areas. That doesn't mean that no one should ever fly again. You know, I think there's a lack of nuance sometimes in this conversation. What we've looked at in our reports and in our research has been looking at 2019 levels and determining that if we could limit growth of long-haul travel, for example, from 2019 levels for a period of time that would allow airlines to catch up and for technology to help to decarbonize, this would make a big difference in our sector's overall capacity to achieve those goals. Interestingly, long-haul is in focus here because while only 1.9% of all of global travel is reflected in long-haul trips, that's Shanghai to Sydney and longer, it accounts for 19% of our sector's emissions. And currently on a business as usual trajectory, those emissions are set to quadruple by 2050 at a time where we need to be reducing. And that means we also need to, because we believe the global travel and tourism sector is vital to the global economy, that we need to encourage growth around other areas like rail, areas like ferry travel, coach travel, where it is viable to electrify and have a fleet of electric coaches that can bring people around, for example. So this is not a forever and ever solution, but we need to get real here and start to look at which areas can we afford to invest in from a climate and climate science perspective, and how do we then help those hard to abate sectors catch up over time so that we can resume the travel that we all want to be doing.
I think there's real meat on the bone here, Jeremy. Thanks for that. I think the whole idea of actually helping certain sectors catch up, you know, whilst we actually also put some focus on, you know, alternative opportunities and solutions, that's obviously very, very key, rather than get stuck just on one thing. If we're looking at, you know, business as usual as it continues, emissions, as we know, you and I have spoken about this, they are set to rise rather sharply as it is and not fall. So with this in mind, is there therefore a chance, a realistic chance, would you say, of reaching net zero by 2050?
Yeah, in our report, Envisioning Tourism in 2030 and Beyond, we studied this very thing. Our goal was to identify scenarios through which the industry could continue to grow. Not only is it something that we all believe is necessary, but it's the likely reality given the increase of accessibility in Eastern countries, for example, the fact that people are going to travel whether we promote travel to them or not. You know, so unless we end up in a place of COVID-like restrictions, people are going to travel, the industry is going to continue to grow. So we wanted to look, how could we achieve that growth trajectory and at the same time achieve the climate targets that we're asking the sector to commit to? We set out with our research partners to find several scenarios through which this could occur. And the scary bit is that we found only one. Now, We call that our decarbonization scenario. And I think it's good news because it does show that there is a path forward and it gives us something to rally around. Now, is that scenario realistic? It's hard to say, you know, but now between now and 2050 is a long period of time and there are so many variables. So we know that it is possible. Is it likely? I think that depends. That depends on political will and providing the right incentives for change. It would require investment and global coordination, the likes of which we've never seen before. Does that mean we should give up and stop trying? I don't think so. We call for $3 trillion of investments in travel and tourism infrastructure in our report. That's something we think everyone could probably get excited about. And when you look at the grand scheme of things, this is only a very small percentage of the receipts that would be expected over that same period of time. So we know travel and tourism plays an important role in the global economy, but we haven't always done as good of a job as I think the industry would like in demonstrating its value towards, you know, these wider outcomes. You know, Charlotte, this year will be a record year for emissions at a time when we know the only way forward is to see sharp reductions. That's going to also mean some hard things. And I think the industry has had a hard time grappling with, well, what do those hard things mean and how do we deal with them? We have not yet convincingly decoupled growth and emissions. So we need to look very carefully at how that's going to happen over time and how we do that with a lens of equity and justice to make sure that destinations which have not contributed too much to the problem are not being unfairly punished by this situation. It's a challenge. There's no question about it. Is there a way forward? I believe that there is.
Thanks for that very specific insight. Yes, there is what the individual verticals, including the travel vertical and industry, can do and should do. We're not the only ones being a little bit slow in the uptake, shall we say, but we are at least, you know, beginning to be at the forefront of having the conversation put into all of the global conferences that we attend and or in the conversation such as today on this particular podcast as well. How can we, I mean, politically and vertically from within travel, but how can we ensure that there really is a will to act? Because we know that pointing fingers at anyone has never worked. I think we tried that for a while and look where that took us, nowhere fast in particular. So from your perspective, when you see of all the initiatives and all of the conversations that are going on, how do we ensure that there really is a will to act, at least within our own industry?
Yeah, our industry is particularly... it's particularly opposed to doom and gloom. I know that, and I think part of that comes from the you know significant and severe challenges that the industry has faced just over the last 20 years. You know, economic downturns, pandemics. I mean, the industry has been kicked down and stood up again, you know, time and time again, which has shown resilience. But I don't think anyone is particularly keen to hear about a more doom and gloom scenarios. That said, tourism, I believe, will increasingly become an outlier if it continues to grow its emissions as it is doing currently. I don't think the world will continue to be able to abide that scenario. Similarly, I think that the pressure is tightening, you know, from different angles. And you see now that regulation is increasing. This is the most unregulated sector in the world, really, even more than oil and gas. You know, travel and tourism has never had to deal with regulations, COVID, you know, being one of the first examples. But now we're starting to see European green claims legislation, which has put certifications and claims around sustainability squarely in focus. This will make it increasingly difficult to operate with just tokenistic action and performative action, which the industry, I'm afraid, has gotten away with a bit over time. Interesting.
More talk than action.
Yeah, indeed. And I think the industry has been waiting. I mean, in one sense, understandably, has been trying to understand the business case for action. But in my opinion, the business case needs to be reframed, and we're perhaps not being as thoughtful about what those levers of the business case actually need to be. So there's been a lot of talk around whether or not there's increased demand for sustainable products or climate-friendly products from consumers. And we also know that while some research has shown that there is an increased interest, or people at least tick a box saying, sure, I'd like to be more sustainable, which is, you'd sort of want to know who's saying no in that moment. But we also know know that there's a gap between intention and action when it comes to purchase decisions, and I don't expect that gap to close anytime soon. Instead, I believe that the business case will continue to be sharpened around things like risk. There are major risks to tourism businesses and destinations being wrought by the climate crisis itself, you know, with huge changes in sort of visitor patterns and weather patterns, and suddenly there's no snow and there's wildfires here and storms here. We also know things like insurance, you know, insurance is going up, particularly around coastal, marine and coastal infrastructure, of which 80% of the industry consists of. While consumers may not be necessarily making this direct connection between sustainability and purchase, we do know that things like reputation are starting to fray a little bit as people around the world start to prioritize values and want to see that industry or that purchase decisions that they're making are not putting unnecessary harm on places or other people. I think of industries like tobacco, like smoking, you know, 20, 30 years ago, widely accepted, and it did not take long for those reputational issues that were fraying at the edges to bring an industry to its knees. So I think, not to be alarmist, but I think these are things, you know, that the industry would be wise to pay attention to and be ahead of. We also know that, you know, because of market forces and situation going on with the global economy, that costs are increasing all the time. I'm looking at taking my family of four on a trip, on a long haul trip, and it's like, whoa, I don't know that I can afford to do that on a regular basis the way I could 10 years ago. So I think the business model is being challenged a little bit. And I believe that forward-thinking companies will attract the investment, will think differently about workforce, which is another, you know, another challenge, noting that there's a crisis there in the way that young generations perceive tourism, and will start to realign the industry with, you know, with these values in order to be a part of the solution instead.
I wanted us to go back and talk a little bit about aviation again. And I'm thinking about having just a little chat around, you know, destinations that are sort of dependent on long haul aviation. We were talking about, you know, creating space for the aviation industry, you know, and maybe alternative modes of transportation. But we are still going on aeroplanes to these, you know, long haul and to the destinations of our choice halfway across the world. How are we to address the issues around that specifically? Do you have any thoughts on that, I wonder?
Lots of thoughts, as you can imagine, Charlotte. You know, first of all, it's important to point out that when you zoom out and you look at the situation globally, most trips that people take are not to remote places, are not to tourism-dependent places. In fact, I don't have the exact statistic. Something like 80% of all of travel and tourism is from eight countries. Found that, you know, in some ways surprising, in other ways not so when you really think about it. But there are some destinations, and I think particularly about small island developing states in the Caribbean and the Pacific, you know, in the South Pacific, where there are no other options. You know, there isn't a rail option to reach the South Pacific, right? And interestingly, you know, tourism was introduced in these places as well as in rural communities. I think here, even in my home state of Washington, here in the U.S., where tourism was presented as the alternative to extractive industry, you know, so as logging and as oil and gas and other sorts of extractive production were becoming less desirable, tourism was presented as the alternative. And now here we are saying, huh, we might not be able to support your economy anymore because of the pollution that was taking place. And there's a lack of fairness here. So interestingly, I mean, emissions of to and within developing countries, as I said, made up only 5.4% of all emissions in 2019. So there's plenty that can be done to address the majority of emissions without disrupting economic development in those places. I think we should also be concerned about destinations that are most vulnerable to climate impacts in countries where tourism represents a really significant proportion of the GDP. We've been working in Honduras, for example, which was rated by GIZ as the number one most vulnerable destination to climate impact. And tourism growth is expected to be the strongest over the coming decades, but that growth is at risk. So what we need here is to take a lens of equity, or what's known as climate justice, to this situation. I think the travel industry has to recognize its responsibilities to those communities, partner with them to secure a just transition and to deal with some of these impacts that in some cases have been caused by indirectly or directly by the industry. But the tourism industry, the nice thing is that there is such opportunity through its shared supply chain and the influence that it has on places to catalyze that wider change. The important thing here is that the perspectives of those destinations are centered, and it just doesn't become another corporate social responsibility campaign, but really a campaign to address the situation at hand.
We're back to the kind of more action, less talk to some extent, but only through the talk, obviously, will we get eventually to the action that we're all looking for. Jeremy, we're slowly coming towards the end, sadly, but we started with a very big question. They've all been big questions, but I will also probably finish with a rather large one, because what are the main milestones that we should look out for? Dare I even ask if there are any quick wins here along the way?
Well, the industry loves quick wins. I love them too, because they help to build confidence. The concern I have sometimes about quick wins is that things tend to stop there. That said, I do think there is a whole lot of low-hanging fruit here. And I think the most important principle to consider there is that sustainability, you know, climate action, these things for such a long time have been siloed as a tick box, you know. Here, oh, great, we did our sustainability plan, and now here's our, let's go back to our business as usual strategy. And ignore those things. Well, the destinations and the businesses that have started to bring in sustainability in as a lens for day-to-day decision-making and strategy are starting to recognize that there are some tensions there that actually are healthy tensions, but need to be addressed in thinking about the sort of short-term needs versus the long-term change that needs to happen here. I think that in that regard, organizations are starting to do the right thing by hiring staff that is responsible for these things, giving them a remit, giving them a budget. This is massive change that we did not see 5-10 years ago in the industry, that all of a sudden you look everywhere and we have a whole community of people that are working on this. So while that's not low-hanging fruit, that is fundamental to the change that's required. The other thing that I think is needed, and unfortunately we're in an emergency, but sometimes it's an emergency that lacks sirens and ambulances, and we are still building fundamental building blocks. Part of that is because the industry has very little experience and capacity in some of these challenging topics. Understandably, the industry is made up of marketers and hospitality experts, and all of a sudden we're asking them to deal with climate change. So one of the low-hanging fruit pieces is actually to just educate, you know, to build some of that fundamental knowledge. We call it in climate, it's called climate literacy. So building some of that literacy about the topic so that the conversations are a little bit easier to facilitate. When it comes to main milestones to look out for, we have a couple that we think are fairly essential. I have a new messaging platform we've been working on, which we're calling Get Real. So here's an opportunity to test out that Get Real message. We think that, you know, moving from performative to real means a couple of things. So number one, reporting on emissions at any level without considering the emissions from transportation to and from, you know, is actually a greenwash. And it's hard because people feel, well, it's not my responsibility. It's outside the scope of my action. That may be the case, but it doesn't mean that it's any less important or influential. And the only way we're going to address that problem is to see those emissions counted. And to give destinations the opportunity to count for the emissions that they have within their own sort of national budgets to determine, well, what do we do with the carbon that we have left to burn? Should we be promoting a bit to long haul and then transferring the rest of our efforts towards a regional or short haul experience? Should we be promoting tourism at all? Should we use this on other things that our citizens might need? That's up to countries to decide. But unless we have this sort of global accounting for the remaining carbon, it's really difficult to assign that responsibility to places. We think even though their consumers may not be demanding experiences and itineraries that fit into a net zero or climate positive perspective, I don't believe that that means that we should stop creating and or packaging them. And I think the industry is really smart when it comes to creative promotion and marketing. And I'm sure with the right brains working towards that outcome, we could start to see climate become a driver of of demand and all the way through to the purchase decision. We may not use the word climate, but the way it gets integrated into what's being offered, I think it really matters. We also need to see, I think, unprecedented collaboration. So the industry loves, in a way, kind of loves to lean on its silos and its fragmented, you know, the fragmented nature of things. It makes it easy for people to say, hey, this piece is not my responsibility. But the more, what we're starting to see more is collaboration across borders and across sectors and across silos. I think that really matters because climate change doesn't really care about administrative boundaries. It cares much, you know, at the end of the day. And that's why, you know, one of our last ones is just about reducing absolute emissions. The industry, and it's not alone in doing this, but has come up with lots of different ways to talk about emission intensity or, you know, hey, we're going to grow anyway, so our emissions have to grow and we're just going to be creating a proportion. But that's actually, at the end of the day, not going to get us where we need to go. So reducing absolute emissions, well, you know, even with growth, will have to be an integral part and sometimes a challenging part of business decisions. But those are the decisions that are going to help the industry take leadership and go forward.
We hope maybe that you will come back to ITB Berlin next year, 2025, when I'm sure that this will be one of the main topics again. In fact, I know it will be one of the main topics at the convention next year. Thank you so much. Collaboration, we hear this again and again. We really need to collaborate and keep doing it. In a sense, I've said, you know, let's talk more action. But with this talk that you and I have had today as well, we are pushing the boundaries. And then, of course, there is no room for complacency. Everybody really needs to jump on this bandwagon right now if they are not already on it. I think you will agree with me on that. Jeremy, you have really been a fantastic travel hero for us here today on the podcast. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks, Charlotte. And thank you for your ability and interest to bring this conversation to a wider audience. It really makes a difference in the grand scheme of things. So let's keep going.
Absolutely. And we can't wait to share today with all of you guys. So thanks also to our audience for listening. You can indeed find more Travel Hero podcasts on ITB's website. Also, later this month, we turn our attention to the topic of the LGBTQ plus community. And we're specifically going to look at how the hospitality sector is embracing this wonderful group of travelers. And this is another big topic coming up. So we hope that you will join us there as well. Thanks for listening today and stay well.